my first mentor always said, you are, even if you have your own company, you're always reporting to somebody. If it, maybe at the end, it's your wife or your bank or your partner. So from my personal perspective, I get the question all the time, especially from other entrepreneurs, but there is no huge change. I think if you are a well-performing person and to push your company forward, you have always to talk and to get into discussions with other people, yeah, with some experienced guys from the industry, with some competitors, yeah. And I did that from the early beginning because, you know, again, I wasn't corporate educated, so I have to learn my lessons from customers, from other experienced guys. So, and it's like it is today, yeah. We have something support, yeah. We have every quarter we have discussion, yeah. And I can call Kai, Chris, all the other guys from Emerin, we personal relation. Every time I have a question and we challenge it. Yeah. So, and I think that pushed me forward in the company.
Welcome to the Leaders in Consulting podcast, the show that delivers cutting edge insights from other leaders of consulting companies. This episode is part of a special series of interviews recorded in front of a live audience at the 2023 Leaders in Consulting conference in Munich. If you want a summary of learnings from each podcast or you want to meet other consulting leaders at our monthly in-person meetups, head to leadersinconsulting.com and subscribe to our newsletter. Please note, you must be a partner or managing director of a consulting company with at least 40 employees to be eligible to join our in-person meetups. That said, let's get started with the show. I'm your host, Sammy Gebele, former management consultant and CEO of Savu. So now we have a really interesting story, and I think that story is especially interesting for anyone thinking about growing faster than normal. And the topic is how the private equity company Emerin Capital Partners helped build and grow DYE to really a crazy big fast growth and big numbers. And you're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. So I'm welcoming Kai from a partner from Emerin Capital Partners and Tilman. He's the one with the initial idea for DYE and the CEO of DYE. And short intro, especially about Tilman. You basically started your first company out of university and did it so successfully that you could even sell it to a private equity company. You stayed with that private equity company for some time, but left because, well, you were not quite happy how it was run and how it was performing. And now the good thing is you didn't just say, well, I never want to do anything like this again. You thought I can do it better. You created a concept, the concept for DYE, and found five other companies, or six companies
it was. Six official ones, yeah.
Six companies. So you first found the companies, you had a concept, and then you went to private equity companies and pitched that concept. And well, it depends on who won or how you could say, you won them and they won you. So you found each other, so to say. And what was it when you started 2015?
Yeah, we started selecting the companies in end of 2014, and 2015 was the time when we pitched for the private equity sponsors. Yeah.
So operations started
at the beginning of 2016.
Okay, and how big was the company in 2016?
Around about 40 million euro revenue.
Okay, and how big is it now?
100 million revenue.
100 million. So. That's almost the size where, if the stock market were good, you could go public. Yeah. Let's see how an exit looks like. But 100 million is a good mark to basically pass as a consulting company. And, now we're going to have some questions to both of you. I hope that, and afterwards, of course, we don't make it long. It's just 10, 15 minutes most that we talk. And then, the mic is open to you and you can ask any question that you have. So, let's start with the initial idea you had for DYE. What was it about and what did you want to achieve? What gap did you see also?
Yeah, you know, you always mentioned it. I started my own company in the digital professional space at the end of the 90s. And most of the founders in our industry did it like me. So we had a lot of companies performing in the mid-20s, which were 10 to 15 years old and were driven by entrepreneurs. So they had achieved a lot, yeah, because the industry was quite new, growing very fast, but they didn't have that corporate education. They didn't have that spirit how to get in a stable growth phase. Yeah. So The market was quite fragmented, and gear was to group some niche players together and form one of the industry leaders. That's it about. So because, you know, and this was worked perfectly, large companies and large clients are looking for large players, yeah, to guide them through their challenges. And so if you have been a 100 people company in the 2015, that had been enough at that time, but it wouldn't have been enough in 2023. So we saw and we solved it by grouping the companies together. And
So that directly ties into the next question for both of you. So what advantages do you see in building or doing a roll-up, so to say, building a bigger consulting company? So one thing is you can win bigger deals with bigger clients because you are bigger. Yeah. But what else do you see as an advantage?
Well, I think there are different concepts on rollout. One thing is, you know, if you look at the very traditional concept, then you basically reach out either to regional growth, or to additional customers or additional channels. You know, that is, I would say, the pure play. Here in DivaE, it was a bit more complex, but on the other side, also, let's say, more value creating and more sustainable, as we basically added additional skills. So we broadened our risk portfolio and continuously basically, let's say, had the trade-off between buy and build. Yeah, do we hire and build certain skills, or is route to market faster if we basically make an add-on acquisition? And that was always, let's say, the trade-off for the management team. If I'm right, we basically, after the initial group of six companies, another 8 or 9 or 10 businesses, and most of them were really driven by adding skill sets and completing the portfolio, the service portfolio, in the light that, let's say, blue chip customers are our target client whom we want to serve with certain skills. Mm-hmm. This is right.
Yeah. So the value chain is the most important reason. And the other thing is about, especially if you are in an industry like ours, which was not really, long life experienced. It's very hard for private equity to get targets from a sweet spot up to starting from 6 million euro EBITDA. So there was no company performing at that level in 2015. Yeah, only large enterprise companies, which already were part of networks. So the only chance is if you go as PE sponsor in that market to group the companies together. Yeah. Otherwise you start with a very small target and, that's not the way private equity acts. So yeah, that's one of the reasons, why some players in our industry kind of approach. Mm-hmm.
And we had our podcast. So if anyone wants to hear the full story, there's a Leaders in Consulting podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you can find it. So I know a little bit more of these advantages. You also said that it's good for talent attraction if you are a bigger player.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's in our industry, I think in yours as well, the most important. But it has been the most important fact when we looked 12 months ago. But it changed a little bit under the last. But, you know, it's all about size. Yeah. You can offer, if you are a 100 people company, you can't offer a career track for your people. So you have no, international offices. You have no strong growth tracks, because if you are maybe a business unit leader, there's only the entrepreneur, heading the company, above you. So if you are a company like ours, we have offices in Sao Paulo, Cincinnati, Sofia, as well as different career levels and tracks. Makes you much more attractive for talents. Mm-hmm.
And because you did it twice, yeah. And the first one, the first experience with private equity, you didn't like that much. What didn't you like about your first experience? And the follow up is, what did you learn from that? And what did you do differently because of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I didn't like it, because honestly, I sold my company, so I liked it very much. but you know, it was more about the So first of all, what is to say, I founded my company and I did it 15 years on my own. So I sort of seen everything if you are entrepreneur, but when I got in the first contact with private equity, I learned a lot of how to go on a really professional way over your industry, even if you're not familiar with the industry. So I learned a lot, and it's public. I can drop that name. It was done with EQT, which is a very professional partner, and it was done in a very professional way. So nothing to say about that. But and that is especially my role in the actual project, and will be maybe in future project my role, is that those guys didn't have any of the cultural spirit of bringing entrepreneurial-driven companies together. So it's a total different case if you, especially in the people business, if you group six companies which have all two or three founders, so we're talking to 25 to 30 entrepreneurs together and have to deal with them, or if you buy a company which corporate-educated guys, it's totally another way to deal with, and that was a problem. So they were not able to handle those type of personality in the right and perfect way. And that led to the point that most of the guys, me as well, left the company after the lock period of 2 years. And, you know, in an entrepreneurial-driven people company, if the founder leaves, yeah, and you have no idea how to keep the DNA going on, you will lose some more people, especially the important ones, and then the business drops.
Yeah. And so what did you do differently because you were the first one looking for these founders? So it's not only, I assume, that you are the right companies in terms of who they're targeting and what their skill sets are, you also looked at those people.
Yeah, first of all, our story was driven by a totally different mindset. We said, okay, let's get rich together. So we didn't search for entrepreneurs who wanted to sell their companies. We searched for entrepreneurs who wanted to make their company larger and play a larger game. So all of the guys we grouped around 24 people. Yeah, okay. Some of them left because they were near to retirement age, but are still 15 people of the entrepreneurs, former entrepreneurs performing. So they are driven by the idea to form something bigger and being one of the market leaders in Germany, and not performing a company with 100 people. So, and that is a totally different mindset. That was the initial idea we agreed about. And then that came up with some more commercial conditions, which reflect that initial idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I may add, you know, from a concept perspective, when Hillmann approached, he had a list of target companies, which was one thing, you know. But he also had a pre-discussed post-merger integration book of 100 pages, you know, with everybody who had basically bought into the leadership structure, who is basically leading or co-leading the group, who is basically in charge of sales or marketing or certain verticals. And even the name basically was on, you know, so it was clear they dropped their company names. It will all be marketed under the roof of digital value excellence, you know, and so that was all worked out and pre-agreed. So there was a complete agreed on concept when they hit the road, you know, and that for us, you know, was really compelling and attractive, and it worked out properly.
And I ask, maybe you already answered with a statement, but why did you finally invest into or wanted to invest into DVAE, besides the reason that you already mentioned?
We invest in entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So that's good for anyone
because
thinking about
it.
Yeah. Of course. How is it working with private equity, Timon? Because, I mean, you were running your own company and then you worked for two different, because now you're not your own boss anymore. You have someone you have to report to. How is it working and what are the advantages and disadvantages?
So my first mentor always said, you are, even if you have your own company, you're always reporting to somebody. If it maybe at the end, it's your wife or your bank or your partner. So from my personal perspective, I get the question all the time, especially from other entrepreneurs, but there is no huge change. I think if you are a well-performing person and if you to push your company forward, you have always to talk and to get into discussions with other people, yeah, with some experienced guys from the industry with some competitors. Yeah. And I did that from the early beginning because, you know, again, I wasn't corporate educated. So I have to learn my lessons from customers, from other experienced guys. So, and this is, it's like it is today. Yeah. We have something support. Yeah. We have, every quarter we have discussion. Yeah. And I can call Kai, Chris, all the other guys from Immerman, we personal, relation every time I have a question and we challenge it. Yeah. So, and, I think that pushed me forward in the company, but there's no huge change. But again, yeah, if you are, if you're not interested in, performing some P&L figures or discussing that, then it's maybe, then you're on the right, on the wrong way. But even if you do something like a bank refinancing, where you have to do that. So there is, from my perspective, there's no huge change. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's something that I already know from our, always had mentors. You always looked for people that could fill gaps where you know you have gaps that could push you to your basically positive limits. And that's what you also have with MM Capital Partners. So that's good that it's because if you never did it, you might think it's like these Heuschrecken. So the guys that try to like increase margin and push everyone. But this feels like really a totally different relationship that you have. You still have to perform and you still have to hit your numbers. Don't get me wrong, but it's more, it feels like a
collaboration. Yeah, but you have to perform every time. Especially if you're on your own and you're maybe, I started my company with 500 euro in the late 90s. So I had to perform because there was no more money. Yeah. Maybe I could have asked my parents. So, and I honestly, now it's a little bit easier because I can go to those guys and they have a professional way to fund money and they have a professional contact to debt, possibilities. So you have to perform it every time. That's what I tell my employees. Yeah. So I don't see the difference, but again, yeah, if you are not used to discuss your decisions with other people, what is always a bad idea from my point of view, but if you don't experience that way to work, then maybe it changes your way to work in your mind. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe last question before we open the mic for questions. Kai, we have some people that might play with the idea of going in the direction of building a bigger company because they see a niche. They are running or working in a company that could do that. What kind of advice would you have if someone wants to go the route that Dimon did go?
What is my advice? I think it's a matter of your ambition and your let's say plan of life. You know, if you're if you look out for somebody who might help you to boost this and take it to, let's say, the next level a bit faster than you might be able to do that alone, then more private equity might be a good partner, you know. I think that's we have done that numerous times in different setups. At the end, we are, let's say, a very growth-oriented business partner for entrepreneurs in the service space.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And what kind of general KPIs would you have to hit to make a private equity company happy in terms of growth or also margin or EBITDA margin?
I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all answer. Over the last couple of years, we have even more to smaller but faster-growing companies. Yeah. So,
What is small?
Small is, I would say, a business that is 10 million in sales. Yeah. But then basically grows 50% plus, you know, that is from a sales or EBITDA target, perhaps too small, you know. But if we basically see the growth perspective, we start thinking about adding other services or businesses or products, how to internationalize the business, how to build up structures and processes to make that business grow even faster and become more profitable. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we realize we basically have a concept and aligned interests in how and where to get the company within the next 5 or 10 years, then we are the play.
Awesome. So now we have some mix here. If you have a question, raise your hand. We have two, three questions maybe at most that we can have here. Anyone wants to ask something?
Hi, my name is Marcus from Diconium. How do you identify the right entrepreneurs? You were just talking about those smaller companies, and there are a lot around, and probably not all of them have the possibility to grow that fast as you would like to have it. So what are you looking for? What are the most important criteria for you to identify the targets?
First of all, we basically look at the markets. You know, if we do not invest in markets that have no growth perspective, yeah, and then normally we basically try to find businesses that outperform the market, and there, you know, it's not a matter of how large you are, how mature your business is. It's a matter of, do you do something better than most or all of your competitors? And can you phrase that clearly? And do you have a concept how to grow into a number one or number two market position? And if you're clear in your mind about where you are and where you want to get, and you basically need a partner to, let's say, enable your organization to move fast enough and provide you with advice and capital to achieve those targets, then we are happy if you start discussions with us.
How do you match the PE culture with the culture of a family business or of a startup? I see big discrepancies on that.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned from my first experience. That's the most, the most challenging game if you group those companies around. And I see my role, especially as a translator. I've been working for private equity companies since I sold my first company. After that, I've been acting as industrial advisor. So I know the industry, I know how it works, and for sure I have to translate one thing or another thing to my team, and especially to the company DNA. So you need always some experienced leader who is able or who knows both industries. Yeah. Because there is a cultural difference. But, most of the managers you have on your team, they are common with the idea of growth and operate with attractive margins, so it's not that huge challenge. But you have to translate one or the other idea. But I think that's always the same if you have institutional shareholders. It's not only about private equity, could also be a family office or something like that. All of them, they have idea of returns of their invested equity, and you have to translate daily business and daily operations.
Okay, so we had one last question. Yeah. Dieter
Schneiderbauer, ECM Ventures. You said that you are looking for entrepreneurs, and then you introduce them into the company. You make them business unit managers for the sector or kind of product leads or whatever. How are you going to incentivize the entrepreneurs when they have sold off their company shares? Are they getting shares of the new company? And what is in for them if they are a successful save over the next 5 years?
Yeah. I think Diva E was a very special situation, you know, where we really had those 20 plus entrepreneurs where it became obvious, you know, that everybody can be the chief executive officer. Yeah. And then you basically have to agree upon this leadership situation. That is not the normal situation. But indeed, we have in many cases teamed up with founders of companies, and we never in basically buy 100% of a company. You know, we are financial minds. We basically understand properly Tillmann's business. We can challenge him. I think we can provide good advice and also let's say a certain at times we are a kind of outsourced support organization for him. But in a normal situation, we invite the entrepreneurs to reinvest in businesses or in the buy and build concept. Yeah. And that basically goes up to, you know, we have most recently invested into a business where the entrepreneur basically had reinvested 49%, you know, because he's so convinced about the growth opportunity of his business. But given the dynamic in the market and his own business, he didn't dare to run the next 5 or 10 years on his own, because he thought, I need a partner to exploit the full potential of the market opportunity, you know. And and then we basically define a concept and a strategy, what kind of businesses in which market segments do we want to address, you know, what do we want to add to the existing skill set to really boost the profitability of this business. And that's how we align interest.
So thanks a lot, Kai Tillmann. I hope it was inspiring and interesting for you. Thanks a lot.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to our monthly newsletter at leadersinconsulting.com to get key takeaways from this podcast delivered straight to your inbox. And to learn more about how you can join our community of consultancy leaders from around the world. You'd really make my day if you left us a review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify. And who knows, maybe we can meet each other at the next Leaders in Consulting monthly meetup. Until then, have a great rest of your week. Your host, Sammy.